welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends and partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin, coming to you live from Naples, Florida. Hot, sunny, relaxing Naples, Florida. Boys, I'm excited to be with you doing radio. And Piper, we have radio business to do. So why don't you zip through that? And by zip through that, I mean give this paying sponsor all of the love and cherishing kind words that you can muster.
I will give them all of the seconds, maybe even minutes that they've funded.
They've paid for.
That's right.
Absolutely.
This is paid airtime. Yeah. Our sponsor is Tyndale Publishers and Nav Press. The book is Down to Earth by, I forgot his name, Tom Hughes. That's his name.
Tommy.
With a name like Tom Hughes, it's hard to remember. That's just a classic, sturdy, trustworthy name.
Absolutely.
But it's a book about Jesus' parables, and so looking at how Jesus connected real life circumstances, physical things around him to significant lessons of the gospel, and then the book then takes those and connects them to our life. So looking at prayer life, looking at money, looking at forgiveness, all of which Jesus used parables to teach on. And Tom Hughes is a longtime pastor, so he takes his experience as a preacher and studying these things and brings it to you as a reader. There's an endorsement, and I love this phrase. It says, "This book will unleash heaven's resources for you."
Whoa.
Which is,
high praise.
Yeah.
Who said that? Like
Glenn
Jesus?
Burris Jr. He is the president of the Foursquare Church.
Okay.
Which nobody in our camp knows what that is, which means
that was going to be my second guess, actually, behind Jesus. So
okay.
You beat me to it.
That's right. So this book will unleash heaven's resources. But in glancing through it, it is a really helpful, down-to-earth, practical look at the parables. And so if you're looking for something that's sort of a devotional read, it's not a Bible study. It's more of a reflection. It is a very good book. The book is down-to-earth. You can go to downtoearthbook.com, or you can find it at Amazon or other places where you buy books, and check it out.
Well, there you have it, boys. That's a book you can buy with your money. And speaking of business, Barnabas Piper, I don't know if this qualifies as breaking news, but it certainly felt like breaking news when we learned it. One, Stephen Furtick, Ferdy, favorite of the program, friend of the program.
Would he consider us friends, or do we just consider him a friend?
Dude, I sure am grateful for him.
That's right. He is a gift that keeps on giving without
really
question.
Is. I mean, yeah, without like putting too fine of a point on it. I mean, I'm sure happy that Ferdy is out there. But Ferdy is out there, and by out there, I mean he spoke at a huge arena show called Lakewood, which is also the name of Joel Osteen's church, I found out about 12 minutes ago.
I'm sure – I can't see you, but I'm assuming that you put church in scare quotes, Joel
yeah.
Osteen's church. Okay, good.
I did. I'm alone here in my office, but I did the air quotes just for the benefit of no one but myself.
For the benefit of conscience.
I felt like morally it was the right thing to do.
That's right.
I don't know. I would have felt convicted if I hadn't. So, yeah, man, I never, believe it or not, before Ronald sent that link out, I had never seen like what a Joel Osteen church service looked like.
Really?
And I gotta tell you, Pipe, I've been to like many, many NBA games in my life, and I would say the NBA is a smidge less over the top than you know what I compare it to, actually? One of my students here at the university where I teach took me to see like Monday Night Raw at the FedEx Forum in Memphis a couple years ago. That's probably the closest analog to what it looks like at Lakewood, in that they've got like one whole end of the arena is like a big screen. It's like screened off, kind of like a concert. But there's just lights flashing and sensory overload all the time. I had to fast forward a little bit to the part where Ferdy started talking. But I got to tell you, boys, it was an assault. I've got many questions. There are many things that I want to hear from you guys on about this. But I want to hear first just like how this sat with you, Ferdy speaking at Osteen's church, Lakewood.
Well, can I jump in with like a preliminary question for Ronnie?
Yeah.
So Ronnie sent us this link, which is just, again, a gift. Thank you, Ronnie, for this. But how did you find it? Because what is it that like on your radar screen that says I am hunting for Stephen Furtick at Lakewood? What
happened? Right. Look at it. a Joel Osteen sermon.
Dude, this is what's crazy, right? So I was on YouTube, and I'm just like scroll. It just came up in my YouTube feed, and you know, I don't. Some stuff just pops in there, and I really don't know how it gets connected and why YouTube is sort of like dishing it to me. Is like, hey, you might like this, Big R. But
it sensed Man of the Cloth, and they're like, here are two pastors, quote unquote, of enormous quote unquote churches. This guy would love this.
I mean, I guess so. I'm looking and I'm like seeing Ferdy, and it says something about Lakewood. And then so it just all the stuff starts turning in my head, right? And I'm like, wait a minute, is he preaching at Joel's church? Because if you know Joel, like we do, you say Joel. You don't say Osteen, you say Joel.
Dude, and right, so, we're buds. Yeah, from way back.
So I clicked on it, and there's J.O. himself, like, introing Ferdy for his Saturday night service. And I'm like, so my first thought was, dude, it's just weird because Ferdy, because I don't know, because of where he came from and some of the people he's associated with, you know, over the years that have been a little more in our camp here and there. Like, I don't know that anybody thinks that he's fully, fully, fully in the camp of like the Osteens, you know, like that into the camp of the coast of the Osteens. Right. And so to see him like fully like say, no, Joel, I would love to come. I would love to come and preach your Saturday night service. Like, it just like fascinated me because it's like, oh, dude, like, this is the jumping of the proverbial shark. I mean, this is it for sure. And so I clicked on it, and
given,
I just
given
I
the gong show that it was. I think they might have actually jumped a literal shark. They think that might have happened just before he walked on stage.
That happened on the stage, yeah.
There might be a pool in front of the stage, like with sharks.
Right,
he had a trampoline over.
I think his suit was made out of
into the pulpit.
I think his suit was made out of shark skin as well. Like, there's lots of opportunities for sharks to be involved here.
Here's how I want you boys to speak into this. Like, so we can all joke around, like we kind of did a little bit in pre-show prep, where we said, no, as far as I'm concerned, Ferdy was already in that camp. Well, all right, yeah, sure, but like, I don't think he's ever had like 2 feet fully, you know, on the shark-infested Lakewood Waters stage, you know, until now. Yeah. Right.
I mean, the only place he's ever had 2 feet firmly planted is under the squat rack at the gym. So, like,
you know, by gym we mean the basement of you know whatever that church is he has in North Carolina.
Elevation.
But so this is what I'm asking. So does this? I mean, this doesn't leave like. This doesn't leave like sort of like any question to those who are like, well, Ferdy, you know, I mean, he's generally okay. He's a little too much sliding over to this area. I mean, this is like fully embracing that whole thing. I mean, to say yes to Joey Osteen, I mean, it's making a statement, right?
Yeah, it's making a statement. Piper, I've always like mentally put Ferdy in that camp, but I've also, to be fair, like really never thought about Ferdy for more than a minute and a half as we were using him as a punchline on our program. So
likewise, Big T. Likewise.
Yeah. I've not given this a lot of thought, but I always kind of mentally put him there. Piper, where did you mentally put him before this, and has that changed? And then I've got a couple more questions.
I mean, he was Osteen has. Osteen has always been what he is. Like, he didn't slide into anything. Mm-hmm. You know, when he became quote-unquote pastor of Lakewood, he just has been the same dude since the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, your best life now was his message from the get-go, whereas Furtick was, like, Southern Baptist Seminary trained and had some associations with people we would consider theologically astute, but also mentored by T.D. Jakes. And, you know, so he was always a mixed bag. And, you know, and then the more and more – and his church puts out some music that is – that a lot of really – that's really good stuff that a lot of churches use. And so there's this really sort of weird mixed bag. But the more you watch him in recent years, especially when he starts lying down on stage and – you know, and he just goes in on these very like inspirational messages that have nothing to do with the Bible. It's pretty clear where he is now, but it was a slow shift, and so people are always slow to pick up on that. Like it's like the old analogy of, you know, you drop a frog in a pot of water. If you drop a frog in boiling water, it jumps out. Drop it in water and slowly let it boil, it dies. There's a lot of people dying in the boiling water of Furtick's message now.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. You're right, Pipe. I mean, that's what I'm trying to say is like there's been like he's kind of like kept his feet in like, you know, just he's kind of just dipped his toes in different waters. It's been kind of a mixed bag. And now literally like the kitty cat that is Stephen Furtick has been literally yanked out of the bag and just like thrown onto the shark infested waters of like Lakewood.
Steroidal greasy kitty cat that is Stephen Furtick. I love it.
I mean, dude, it's just crazy to me because it's like, I just wonder if like some people now are going to be like, oh dude, like I can't like, you know, I used to listen to a Furtick message every once in a while because, you know, it really spoke to me. And, you know, I've always loved Elevation Worship, like those guys. Like, is that going to tweak them?
No, because, you know, not even a little bit. You know what's going to happen? More people are going to like Joel Osteen because Furtick shared that stage.
So you're saying this played better. So you're saying this was good for Joey.
I mean, it not that he needed people to be good for him. He's doing just fine filling up the former Houston Rockets arena and whatever. But no, it's nobody is going to see this and say, oh, I don't know if I can trust Stephen Furtick's preaching anymore. Like if they were on the fence, there was enough evidence that they shouldn't trust already. Anybody over any edges.
But wouldn't you say, though, like if you go back far enough, wouldn't you say that if you had to choose, like Ferdy has probably preached like an Orthodox sermon in his life, whereas Joel, like maybe not.
Well, sure. Yeah. But I'm just talking about at this point, Furtick has been who he is for a few years now. Like, I don't think he's sliding any which direction now. Like he's... He is that guy.
I think most of us saw him. I never saw him. I know he kind of got leveled as like prosperity guy, but I thought he was just more like super, super, super thin megachurch guy, which I mean, a lot of guys.
What's the difference?
Well, I know. It's a very fine point, but there's a lot of those mega guys that we would never put in with J.O.
Baby, let me like bring this down to home. And then I do have a couple more. I have a couple more conceptual questions I want to lay on you guys, but let's envision a world. How big does Matty Chan's church have to get / how many stakes does he have to sell before like people start to talk about him as a prosperity guy? Could that ever happen? Is there a universe in which that happens or is he too solid? Because I don't listen to his sermons either. I mean, to be fair, I'm not that familiar with Matty Chan's work either.
His sermons certainly don't lend itself to it. He still, you know, preaches a gospel that's fairly exclusive as the gospel is wont
like
to be.
Like the actual gospel.
Yeah, like when you preach the real thing. Haters are going to accuse him of that because anytime somebody is successful and there might be wealth involved, there are just those who get jealous. But he also... I don't know if he's public about it, but other people have been public about his decision to like not keep the royalties from his books. That all funnels back into the church's ministry and things like that. So he's taken steps to not build an empire around himself.
Yeah. Minus the steak empire. But hey, we all get one of those, you know?
But you know what? I mean, if a pastor wants to build an empire and a side business, like that's how business works. It's weird when they do it with the church.
That's like, true. That is how business works.
If they want to be good businessmen and a church leader, that's okay. Mm-hmm. It's when you turn...
Are you really allowed to do that, Pipe, though? I mean, honestly, that was a big statement you just made because I don't know that we allow pastors
is there precedent
to start really successful side steak businesses. Here's Maddie. Why don't you invest some money in meat? All the salary we're paying to you, Maddie, invest in some meat. We're totally good with that.
Well, okay. Let me throw this back at you. What's the problem with it other than the fact that it hasn't been done?
Baby, I have zero problem with it, but we're not talking about reasonable, rational people like us on the HR. We're talking about the average person that's going to look at Maddie and really going to judge him for almost anything, but really starting a steak empire. I mean, there could be some rational argumentation behind that.
To be fair to Maddie, it's being done by all three of us, just not very well.
Right.
I think you have to do it in a mediocre way, and then no one can find fault with you.
Right, if you're part of the happy rant, nobody's judging you because that takes more breath in your lungs than money we're making to judge you for.
Yeah, I mean,
you
know? What's the difference between that? I mean, to me, that seems almost more justifiable and legitimate than you know, the megachurch pastor who charges 10 to 20 grand per appearance to speak at conferences.
Dude, I think it's totally justified. Yeah. I think it's awesome that he wants to
invest money.
And in fact, like if you're pastoring a bunch of Texans, yeah. I feel like there's something that's probably like fairly down to earth about going, oh, I need to understand how commerce works and how, you know, cattle works and how the market.
Probably going to be an oil tycoon one of these days, so he needs to start with beef. It's good.
I can't see a problem with it at all, other than the fact that it's not a model that exists most places. Most pastors, when they do a side hustle, are building it around a more gospel oriented things, and that's more confusing.
I'm just saying, like, we're not ever going to have a problem with many of those things, but the average person that looks at steak empires and pastors is probably just going to have trouble with
to that. Be fair, there is no evidence that he's building a steak empire. They might own 4 cows at a time. Like, who knows? So we have said
maybe
I feel like
Matty Chan is Pipe's cousin. Pipe's going all in on this.
I know, man. He really. I think Pipe may have. Maybe Pipe's invested in.
I think Pipe's got some stock in Matty's steak.
Well,
empire.
They haven't made a public offering, or I would.
He's recording from the backseat of that gigantic Cadillac with the horns on the front.
You know what? He has some steak in the game.
His Ford King Ranch
is
very roomy.
He's got some steak in the game. Ranch, it is very...
No, here's the thing. I will stand up for Matt Chandler more than many megachurch pastors because I know enough people who know him to attest to his actual character quality. And so, but also just taking a step back from that, if it was any other megachurch pastor, so I mean, pick somebody who's in our camp or outside our camp and you find out they have invested in a side business.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that.
I know. It always raises flags. Even though most people don't find out about it. Like
flags? Just that it's like, that it's,
that they like, have the money to do it.
Dude, they have the money whether or not they do it.
Because pastors really aren't ever allowed to like make, and I don't know what the line is, right? Your dad probably has something to do with where that line's at, Pipe. But like pastors really aren't allowed to make, you know, a lot of money or a certain amount of money, you know, that allows them to invest in other businesses, it seems like.
Yeah, no, there's just sort of no like rich people things in the pastorate.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, I'm just saying like the average person might. You know, they might just have a problem.
Sure. I get that just because there is sort of that, and we've talked about this a ton, just that weirdo evangelical guilt about accumulating anything.
But Chan is as solid as they come, man. I mean,
boys, to be clear, though, I mean, here's my position on the matter. I don't know anybody that knows Matty Chan, and I don't care about Matty Chan. I just like making fun of people who have more money than me. So, for me, like that's where it starts and stops.
That Chan has less money than you. Chan puts all his royalties back in the church. You keep yours. You might be three times as loaded as him, man.
Dude, I keep all those lavish royalties.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, what do we
from
we
such
talk
titles
about
as right Finding God in the Dark and the Bridezilla of Christ? I mean, it's just raining money. So let's get back to not to get too far afield from people on whom it is actually raining actual money. Ferdy and Osteen. I wasn't done talking about this.
There are so many more observations that need to be made about this particular event.
Okay, so there are, and I have a question, Pipe. So this is based on having watched roughly 4 minutes of this thing, right? And I think you and I probably watched the same amount in that we both kind of remarked on Ferdy's words that made Osteen tear up, which was just a great moment. And my question to you, Piper, you've been around a lot of people. You've been around a lot of pastors, a lot of authors. I have too. How smart is Furtick? Like, if we were to administer, like, not an IQ test necessarily, but, like, if Furtick went to your college, would he have been one of the smarter guys or not one of the smarter guys?
You know, I'm going to go full Wheaton snob here.
Uh-huh.
There's no way there's not a snowball's chance in Phoenix that he could have gotten into Wheaton.
Oh my goodness, that's so funny. Where did he go to undergrad? Do we know?
I don't know, like Weber State or something. I'm guessing here, but
Weber State.
I'm gonna go ahead and do a little Googling while we
Let's
talk about this. But
let's do a little research. Ron, how smart do you think Furtick is?
Oh, dude. Well, I have a friend who graduated with him at Southern.
Okay.
So,
I've met a lot of Southern grads. I don't think that says anything about intelligence.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a Southern guy. So, man, I, you know, it's, He just, Matt, to me, I look at Furtick as a guy that was like an opportunist, and he's one of those guys that you meet a lot of people that really liked him as he was making his way through the ranks. Yeah. And for whatever reason, they had bad discernment, but there was something about his personality that like drew them to him. And again, whenever I hear his personality, I feel like, well, I would not have been included in that list, you know, just going off of personality. But yeah. Like, I think he's one of those guys that had, like, we would stand back and go, I don't get it. But he's one of those guys that seemed like he had a gift and a talent for getting in with the kind of people that could help him propel forward.
He graduated from North Greenville University. And so this all just clicks because that is a Baptist school. Yep. And in the past, it has been sort of a preacher boy school. Yeah. To your point, Ron, he has that personality for getting in with the right people, but also just like that preacher boy charisma that that people go, oh, this boy's got it. He's going to go places.
Dude, when he was in the weirdo preaching world. Yeah, in the weirdo preaching world. And when he was in North Greenville, he was wearing his pressed khakis and his like, you know, blue shirt with the yellow tie, and he was killing it. He was leading chapels.
Yeah, I mean, he used to have like the little like Flavor Saver thing on his lip, you know, sort of the emergent church look. But he was in a conservative evangelical place, and so he was.
Yep.
I mean, it's Rob Bell. He is Rob Bell.
He did start as a worship guy. You guys know that, right? So
that makes a ton of sense for the look. But I mean, he in terms of the charisma. Except Rob Bell actually is a Wheaton grad. But
that's true.
In terms of that charisma that doesn't make a lot of sense in terms of the success it bears out, they're two peas in a pod.
No, they are, man. That's actually a great.
Well, dude, you know why? Because it's like what I've always thought, like when people always says, oh, Rob Bell, but he's such a great communicator. It's too bad he says all this horrible stuff. And it's like anytime I've heard Robbie, the whole like great communicator thing always baffles me. Like I don't really. And maybe
really, baby, talk about that.
Well, I'm sensitive to all of his tick. I'm sensitive to more like the way people communicate than whether what they're saying is anything compelling.
Dude, and you know the tricks. You know the tricks that he's doing.
Yeah, and it's just to me, it's like it's so I don't know. There's just nothing compelling about that type of communicator. I mean, it's more of a personality thing. So when people say that about Ferdy, even like, well, yeah, but he's a great communicator. It's like, yeah, but can you handle the looks on his face and like the way he says his words and like the way he flexes his arm when he's holding the mic? Like that stuff kind of matters to me. I mean, call me crazy.
Not to mention, but just you have to remember that the vast majority of humanity goes for lowest common denominator. Like, think about the music that always charts, the top 100 stuff. It's like 87 of those songs, and that's being generous, are crap. They're just garbage, but people love garbage. There's a reason why, like, Nickelback still makes music that people buy. There's a reason Florida Georgia Line thrives. There's a reason why, like, party hip-hop exists and nobody listens to, or not, actual good lyrical hip-hop does not. You know, there's a reason why your more avant-garde electronic music, Ron, is not charting, because people don't go for stuff that's creative or takes thought or whatever. People love lowest common denominator. That's what these guys provide. Zero thought. Just make me feel good. It's like the summer pop jam of preaching.
If Ferdy was a band, given the arc of his career, let's do music comps. If Ferdy was a band, who would he be?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Ron hates this bit. He hates when I do
this. Yeah, I hate this bit.
This is a pet peeve for you, Big R.
I mean, we talk about that.
Why is it such a pet peeve?
I don't know. Because everybody's going to say something different than I would say, and I just think they're wrong.
That's the point. Different opinions make for interesting podcasts, Ronald.
Yeah, I have different thoughts about that.
Ron hates this bit. This is fascinating.
It's doing things that Ron hates is a lot of fun.
We're gonna do two of them today.
I think let me keep it current right now. So
keep it current, baby.
Yeah. So he would be a. I feel like Ferdy would be like 21 Pilots or something like that. You know, that's
interesting. Yeah. That's on the kind end, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like, let's see. It's got to be somebody who's oddly compelling to the masses, and there's zero reason to understand it. So, like, my initial gut reaction was like Maroon 5, but then there are actual.
No, that's good. They're pretty good.
But they actually there's actual musical talent there.
Yeah, but hold on, you totally summed it up, Pipe. You totally summed it up, because when you look at that lead guy, like, it doesn't. They've written a couple of good songs, but I cannot tolerate to look at him singing them. So that's the problem, right? So
would you rather hear Preach a Sermon, Adam Levine from Maroon 5 or Ferdy?
That's the exact same experience. Ron's right. It is the exact same thing, except that, like, Stephen Furtick tends to keep his shirt on when he preaches.
I'm going to say something nuts.
Like, so far.
If you go back far enough, man, yeah, so far is so correct. Ferdy has preached an Orthodox sermon that we would go, okay, he read the text, pretty good. Pretty good illustrations, pretty good, whatever. Like, you would go like, okay, like, Ferdy, you kind of did it right there. But the fact that Ferdy, like, opened his mouth and said those words made it so that I can't stomach it, just like Adam Levine. It's like, Adam Levine could sing the best song ever written. I'd be like, the problem is that it's Adam Levine. That's the problem, right?
I think there's some truth in that.
There's some truth.
Yeah, I mean, just in thinking about the aesthetic of experiencing them doing the thing that they do, it's exactly the same.
Because even if Joel preached something where you went, dude, I don't know, he didn't get all like money and like prosperity. It was kind of like sticking to the text. It's just the fact that Joel is the one opening his mouth that makes it so like, yeah, it just doesn't matter. I mean, dude, he could have just word for worded like a D.A. Carson sermon. I'd be like, nope.
Dude, keep that point handy, because I want to bring that up when we talk about our last topic, because I think it has import, because that's a thing that we do as audiences. Pipe, I've got an NBA player comp actually for Ferdy.
Ooh.
I'm going off book here. Dwight Howard. Scored a lot of points, a lot of hype.
That's way too generous to Furtick. Way too generous. Like,
dude, no, but everybody hates Dwight Howard now. Like, that's the thing. Like, he never won anything significant.
Yeah, but the problem is that Stephen Furtick, like, Dwight Howard was a multiple time defensive player of the year, was on a Hall of Fame career. I mean, he'll probably make the Hall of Fame just by numbers accumulation. Furtick was never that good.
No, he's never good, but he could fill an arena.
Can I make this simple, man? Ferdy is literally just the Dane Cook of preachers. I mean,
Dane Cook did a couple good things.
Stephen Furtick needs to drop his handheld mic at that statement. That's really on the money.
Fills an arena,
lowest brow stuff, lowest common denominator, attracts
a gazillion people, but like, no, you don't ever meet one person that likes him. Like, you're not allowed to like him,
and will be completely forgotten when his time is done.
Yeah, that's
nothing
true.
Memorable.
Boys, except let's talk. Time will never be done.
You think Ferdy's time will never be done?
He's the newsboys of like evangelical preachers. I mean, they
dude,
go.
That's right. Him. When he's 60, he's going to be doing the same shtick.
Yeah, he'll have a guy filling in for him unless
there's a scandal, in which case he will definitely be remembered. He'll be like the Jim and Tammy Faye Baker or something like that.
You never know.
Interesting. Boys, let's talk about somebody else who can't say anything right ever. It's Dougie Fresh. Douglas Wilson.
Dougie Fresh.
Formerly of our camp, I guess, right? Didn't he used to be in our tribe, kind of? Ish. Like, what's the deal with this guy? Ish?
He still is. Like, in terms of a ton of white reformed people love him. Yeah. Because he is clever. He is articulate. He's kind of the exact opposite of Stephen Furtick, actually.
Pretty much.
He is.
Dude, you're right.
His aesthetic is unappealing. He lives in a remote place where there's sort of a weird vibe around their whole institution. He is brilliant intellectually and argumentative and contentious. Yeah. Can't stay out of a controversy to save his bleeping life. And he's other than gender, he is the exact opposite of Stephen Furtick.
Yeah, that's true. Can't say anything right now, though. Like, I really wish somebody would publish a pamphlet for me of, like, if you're basically a reformed white guy who still wants to be cool, like, who are you allowed to like? like whose blog post are you allowed to be okay with? And it might be a pamphlet that changes every month.
Generally
it might be like
not people who say racially insensitive things.
Well, dude, no, I know. And I know we're not allowed to like this Douglas Wilson anymore. But like, so okay, just to peel back the curtain a bit on our business. We have been, as a company, in high-level talks with one another about what to do about our sign-off. Because obviously we're in a moment in our history as a program where we have to change the sign off, drop the sign off completely. We have to do something about the sign off. And one of you guys suggested, why don't we do Douglas James Wilson? And I was trying to get a little background. I was like, what's so terrible about this guy? And somebody sent the link to the thing that he wrote after Rachel Held Evans passed away. And I read it and I got to tell you, man, maybe I'm the idiot here. Like 90% of it I was okay with.
That's Doug Wilson in a nutshell. 90% right and 10% that, like, it's like saying 90% of my car works except the brakes.
Well, dude, but I think I even said this after I read it. I was like, if Matt Chandler had written this, we'd all be clapping and saying how helpful it was. But because it came out on Douglas Wilson's label, it's the worst. And he's the worst. And
we hate him. I think the premise of that statement is wrong because guys like Matt Chandler have the sense not to write it.
Well, dude, that's true.
And so I don't think Matt Chandler believes it either, by the way, to Matt's credit.
Yes. Even the way he started that article, he was basically like, recently we found out that Rachel Held Evans, who had taken a tragic and terrible theological direction, passed away. And then he goes into, and I want to start with condolences to the family, but you didn't. You started with talking about how much you hate her theology. If you wanted to start with condolences, you should have started with condolences, Doug. But that's him in a nutshell. Like, there's just a disconnect from human reality in a lot of ways. Like, he lives in, I don't know if it's an intellectual sphere or what it is, but there's just a disconnect. This is going to make some listeners mad. Like, because there are people who just love him. And that's because one of the major problems that people in our camp have is that they associate with soteriological and theological frameworks before they look at character, before they look at anything social, anything emotional intelligence, anything. It's theological framework first, and on that front, Doug is pretty solid. But there's all those other things where he creates issues.
Which would make you say that his theological and soteriological framework isn't really that great at the end of the day.
Well, right. I mean, in my mind, theological framework and the framework of one's life ought to be part and parcel with one another. But correct. In the Reformed camp, we are very comfortable separating the two. We are right. Very comfortable looking at somebody and going, he's a total jerk, but man, he can preach. That's a problem.
Right. Yeah.
So the first sign-off was great because it came to us naturally. It was an homage to something that happened to Trogues years ago. And it just felt really easy and natural. In this process of like trying to find the perfect next sign-off, i.e. somebody who we can make fun of, so that it makes us look better and brings us more listeners. I got to tell you, it's been a little cringy. It's been hard to do. And I don't know what to do with it. And yeah, at one level, it would probably, now is probably the right time to sort of jump on the full on making fun of Douglas Wilson train. And we could do that, but maybe our listeners can let us know if that would be a good business move for us or not.
Let me throw out a couple listener suggestions that we've gotten.
Yeah.
So we've gotten two suggestions from female listeners. One of whom said basically all of these are very kind and gracious. There was no criticism, just ideas. They said maybe it's time to get off of the Rachel bandwagon because. First, it was Rachel Held Evans, and then it was Rachel Hollis, who was, you know, girl, wash your face. We've done that for, I don't know, two or three episodes.
That was like a placeholder for
yeah,
two
it
weeks.
Yeah, it was.
Nobody
it
was married
the,
to that.
It was the trying to, like, a sign off in good taste, I guess.
Sure, sure.
While staying in our lane. And this listener pointed out, what about one of the male theological train wrecks, which there are many. And I think Douglas James Wilson could potentially fit that bill. We had another listener who sent in a couple of what is it? Is his name Carl Lentz? The
guy with the abs?
Yeah, the guy with the lats, the abs, the hair, the face.
Yeah, Hillsong, New York.
Hillsong,
yeah.
That's the guy. You know, titles of his books that are very like destiny oriented, those kinds of things.
You know, that's funny. I could get behind that.
So that, you know, that's a possibility. Let's see. I don't know that anybody else has sent in specific suggestions, but it definitely moved like the limited feedback we've gotten has been sort of move away from the progressive female sphere and find another whipping boy. So if we're going to go a direction, that's the listener feedback we have gotten.
Mm. Yeah. And
you
and
seem enthusiastic, Ted.
I just don't like doing what people tell me to do. That's a huge character
you're
flaw.
You're such a four.
I get it. It's a huge character flaw. So I don't know where that leaves us.
I just don't like doing what people tell me to.
I don't like being told to do something and then immediately jumping through that hoop. That seems like the wrong thing for us to do.
So the Carl Lentz one was Own the Moment. That is the name of his book.
Own the Moment. That's a great title.
It kind of works.
It does kind of work.
Of all of the ones that we have bandied about, I kind of feel like that's the closest to on the money.
Because the Carl Lentz arc, too, like it has the potential to get way funnier, like before it goes away completely.
There's enough critical mass that I don't think he's going away.
That's the thing. That's what I mean. There's going to be more books with more funny titles. There's going to be more like goofy celebrity sort of partnerships that arise there. I think that one's got some legs. I like
maybe
that.
maybe we need to give it a test drive and just kind of see how it feels. You know, like there's some things that it's a good idea and then you try it and it's just
gotta kick the tires
work.
a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gotta kick the tires. See what the audience thinks. I mean, the world's just one big focus group anymore, which bums me out. But
yeah, with social media, you know, we get instantaneous. I mean, if I post an episode at like 3 a.m., by 7 a.m., we have comments telling us what people liked. We have very gracious listeners who say very nice things occasionally push back.
Yeah. Well, boys, I mean, I don't know. We may need more high-level board meetings about this. We may have to rent some more office space and just get in there and try some of these out. But I don't know. I don't know. Any parting thoughts? Are you shopping for cabins right now?
Yeah, I'm looking for some cabs right now.
Looking for some cabs. Babe, you were not a fan of this conversation.
No, it lacks some spontaneity, which is what a sign-off needs to have. You know, so to discuss it this blatantly in front of our audience and then
Babe,
to try
it's,
to
it's
do
really,
it is
it's the in front of the audience thing, isn't it?
Well, it lacks spontaneity, and it's never going to be funny if we decided to use like Own the Moment. It's never going to be that funny because of the way that we had to set it up. It's almost like telling everybody sort of the punchline, and then from that point on, telling the joke every week. It bothers me on that level. I think we just need to think through this. I think we need to get some. I think getting some listener suggestions, which of course we won't receive any of them. Well, I mean, we don't like being told what to do. Right, we don't like to be told what to do, so we're not going to use any of them. But please, no, send your offerings. We beg
Absolutely.
Of you. I don't know. I think we need to think it through. You know, I mean, maybe the RHE thing. Maybe there's a sense where sign-offs now, we need to step ahead of sign-offs in general. We need to be a little
more progressive. Maybe it does sort of come down to sign-off. Everything has a season. And we're entering a new season, which is kind of to be defined and determined.
Correct. I totally agree with that, man. I think we're better than that. I think we're better than coming up with some contrived sign-off.
You know what we can't be? We can't be Stephen Furtick and go straight to the lowest common denominator.
Correct, man. Or Carl Lentz, for that matter. Or Joel Osteen, for that matter.
Yeah.
What would the lowest common denominator sign-off be?
Joel Osteen? Would it just be Best Life Now? Go out and live?
It would be something like, for us, it would be something like, you know, until next time, reform people suck. Or something like that.
We're still reformed people.
That's right. But isn't that our brand? We make fun
that's
of the
of
thing that
brand.
We are.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of our brand.
Well, that, see, now we're getting a little bit closer to like having another two or three conversations about finding something that might work, right?
Yeah. Boy, this is feeling a lot like work, you guys.
Yeah, it's feeling a lot like work. Dude.
I'm getting bored. I'm starting to look at text messages and stuff. Can we move this along?
Yeah, yeah, let's move it along by ending.
I'm looking at reviews of the new Melody Carlson Christmas novel, and that's never a good thing for me.
Dude, who's Mel? I mean, does that make you feel envious? Like she's got all this.
Oh yeah, she's a
new
brand name on Ravel, you know.
It's
a brand name on Ravel.
We've gone from shopping for cabins in Ohio to looking at reviews of somebody else's
Christmas
novel.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet mercy, save us.
This is when I start doing my shopping for what I have to look forward to for the season, boys. So bear with, you know, bear with.
Well, and just to be clear, we're not making fun of Melody Carlson.
No, we're making fun of Ron. You're clearly making fun of me. Yeah, but that gives me my distinctiveness, and that's what I mean.
We have done what we always do on this program, in that we have beaten these topics to death. In our case, it's never been more true than it was today. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
These EPs find their way into the hands of Chris Tomlin. And so we got this email out of the blue that, well, he was inviting us to go on this major arena tour of the United States. And at that time, we were like, well, we're not even really a band. Do we tell him we're not a band?
Chris Llewellyn from Ren Collective shares some of his life story on The Walk, a podcast for worshipers. Join us to hear conversations and devotionals from the artists of the church. Find The Walk on lifeaudio.com, worshipleader.com, or your favorite podcast platform.